Good day, I'm John Trader with M2Sys Healthcare Solutions, and welcome to another installment of our podcast series where we interview industry professionals for information, analysis, and opinions on the biggest issues that face the healthcare industry. Our topic today is a big one, and by big, I'm referring to the term big data in healthcare. Our guest is Mandy Bishop, principal at Adaptive Project Solutions, a full-service healthcare IT consulting firm providing tailored expert resources and best practice solution delivery methodology to both government and private entities. Adaptive Project Solutions specialties include MMIS and MITA, IV&V, data management and analytics, informatics, care management systems implementation, ICD-10 conversion, HIPAA and ACA enhancements, and ACO and PCMH alternative payment and attribution models. Let's take a moment and share a little bit of background information about Mandy. She's a healthcare data management veteran, blogger, and health IT social media maven who has been working with organizations at all stops along a patient's continuum of care for the past decade. From payers to providers and clearinghouses in between, Mandy's body of work includes pioneering clinical data exchange and big data analytics initiatives. Here are some highlights of her past career. She instituted foundational EMR integration and HL7 ADT/ORU and CCD clinical data exchange between provider entities, clearinghouses, and payers. She designed clinical, patient, and provider subject areas and integration/validation role requirements for next-generation payer data warehouses based on industry standard ADRM. She also designed meaningful use attestation reporting reference architecture for multi-EMR health information exchange source patient engagement measures. Her recent publications include the Eyes Wide Shut series on the reality of meaningful use challenges located at www.emrandhipaa.com/Mandy. That's John Lynn's website, isn't it? So big data. Let's set the stage on this topic for a moment, Mandy. The digitization of healthcare as dictated by the HITECH Act and other legislation passed by Congress that incentivizes healthcare organizations to move towards electronic health records has spawned access to years of research and development data into medical databases. The U.S. federal government and other public stakeholders have also been opening their vast stores of healthcare knowledge, including data from clinical trials and information on patients covered under public insurance programs. In parallel, we've also seen recent technological advances which have made it easier to collect and analyze information from multiple sources, which is a major benefit in healthcare since data for a single patient may come from various payers, hospitals, labs, and physician offices. It seems, though, Mandy, that while healthcare costs may be paramount in big data's rise, clinical trends are also playing a really important role. Physicians have traditionally used their judgment when making treatment decisions, but in the last few years, there has been a move towards evidence-based medicine, which involves systemically reviewing clinical data and making treatment decisions based on the best available information. Aggregating individual data sets into big data algorithms often provides the most robust evidence, since nuances in subpopulations, for example, the presence of patients with gluten allergies, may be so rare that they are not readily apparent in small samples. So, Mandy, although the healthcare industry has lagged behind sectors like retail and banking in the use of big data, partly because of concerns about patient confidentiality, there are those who predict it could soon catch up. Pioneers in the big data sphere are already achieving positive results, which is prompting other stakeholders to take action for fear they may be left behind, the keeping up with the Joneses. These developments are encouraging. They also raise an important question, Mandy. Is the healthcare industry prepared to capture big data's full potential, or are there roadblocks that will hamper its use? Mandy, it seems as if fiscal concerns, perhaps more than any other, are driving the demand for big data applications. After more than 20 years of steady increases, healthcare expenses now represent 17.6% of the United States gross domestic product, which is nearly $600 billion more than the expected benchmark for a nation of the United States size and wealth. It's often said that the ability to collect, analyze, and learn from big data is a key component to not only reduce the cost of care, but also to help improve the individual and collective health of our population. So with that said, Mandy, let's start with a brief discussion on what big data actually is by trying to wrap our heads around the concept. Can you please explain to us what the term big data actually means, what its relationship to healthcare and improving the quality of patient care is, and can you provide us with some examples of big data?
Sure. So you've done an excellent job with your introduction. That was very, very comprehensive. And at its core, big data is exactly what it sounds like. It is the amassing of petabytes and petabytes, which is just a significant amount of physical information bytes that is available about a particular subject. So when you amass big data on a particular subject, in this case we're talking about healthcare, so we're talking about patient data, so that might be clinical data, it might be claims data, it may be personal health record data, it might be quantified self data, but big data at its core basically means the amount of information, amount of individual bytes that's available on a particular subject. There are several advances, as you mentioned, in technology that have made this big data become kind of a buzzword, right? So there's been a convergence of computing power, connectivity speeds, finally the technology to query large data sets of this nature effectively without queries having to run for days and days. All of these actions in the industry have converged to create the opportunity for us to leverage big data analytics in a way that was not possible even 10 years ago. It's applicable to healthcare in particular, or certainly it's going to become more applicable to healthcare as we continue to move from the paper application of medical data. Right now, I believe that fully half of all of our clinical data is still captured either on paper or in free text, unstructured data formats that is not readily available for analytics. It requires a significant amount of translation before it can be consumed systematically. This is, of course, a challenge for big data analytics in the healthcare field, and healthcare as an industry has hampered itself in its use of big data analytics by not standardizing data capture mechanisms until very late in the game. It's not its fault. Up until the advent of HIPAA, the healthcare industry was chartered with maintaining data internally, right? So proprietary information systems, and those information systems were, at their core, paper processes that may have had some form of electronic attachments for them and electronic transport, but the fax machine. But the vast majority of the information that was captured was not to be shared beyond the four walls of the hospital by mandate. Now, all of a sudden, that paradigm has shifted, and so we are not just finding big data for each of those hospital entities, but now those hospital entities are expected to share the data with from their four walls with external entities. So we're creating larger and larger data sets with fewer and fewer standards applied at this point. So as the data capture mechanisms have improved, and certainly as the mandates of high tech and meaningful use are requiring that healthcare providers shift towards electronic medical records and that they standardize their data capture mechanisms, is creating the opportunity for downstream big data analytics across the clinical and claims continuums. Claims data has been structured and standardized for several years now. There are very, and this is because the reimbursement models from CMS for Medicare and Medicaid are very, very strict. So in order for us to have effective analytics, we have to have standard data formats and we have to speak the same vocabulary for each one of the fields that's available to us in the clinical data set. And that is something that's called semantic interoperability. We do not currently have that in healthcare, and it's going to take several years for us to get there. However, the opportunity truly exists for big data to address kind of the quality of patient care, which is something else that you just touched on. Right now, unfortunately, quality is defined by cost mechanisms. So quality measures and quality metrics, as you see them, really relate to a provider's adherence to standard treatment protocols, right? So, for example, a diabetic patient has to measure their blood glucose X amount of times per day. you suffer from lupus, if you suffer from another chronic disease. There are particular tests that have been accepted as treatment protocols, standard treatment protocols for these diseases. Those tests must be performed at regular intervals. Those intervals are measured, and the performance of those tests equates to quality. Quality definition does not currently include anything to do with clinical outcome of the patient. So right now, you were completely dead on when you explained that the fiscal incentives and the financial aspects of big data analytics are driving the healthcare industry. Unfortunately, that's going to continue to be true for the foreseen future until we derive a way to tie quality definition to clinical outcome improvement. We are going to be hamstrung to financial metrics, which, of course, are driven by larger industry market ties.
Thank you so much for that information, Mandy. Let's talk for a moment about the possibility of what changes big data could bring to the healthcare industry. You've actually already touched on a couple of these points already, quality and cost of care, for example. It's been said that big data has the potential to radically alter the healthcare landscape from the cost of care to the evaluation of health outcomes. Again, you already touched on a couple of points that big data promises to help with in relation to healthcare. My question for you is, can you provide us with some additional examples of how big data promises to reshape the industry? If someone were to say, so what? We have all this massive amount of data that providers are accumulating. What can I expect to get out of this? How does big data promise to reshape the healthcare industry?
Well, I've heard there are a couple of different things that I'm very, very excited about with respect to the promise of big data in healthcare. Population management is certainly something that's on the tip of everyone's tongue, right? Population management is going to have a significant impact. Moving away from a fee-for-service payment model and moving towards value-based pricing and kind of population cost management is going to provide us with an opportunity to identify trends, as you kind of indicated in your introduction. You have the ability to locate outliers and locate correlations in a large data set that otherwise would not be apparent when you have a very small sample size. So when you're dealing with a population of patients as a whole, you may have the opportunity to locate a more effective treatment protocol than something that a clinical research organization has been able to identify through really closely controlled trials, right? Those types of opportunities for population health, I think, are significant. And I'm extremely excited at what the movement toward the accountable care models are going to have with respect to those types of identification of previously unforeseen correlative relationships between even lifestyle factors and the patient outcome. I also believe that personalized medicine with genomics and proteomics, as well as the quantified self movement, has the ability to be revolutionary. So I think that if we have the opportunity to identify causative relationships through the analysis of a large data set with genomics, and then we can apply that large data set, we can apply that learning to the individual, we can do individualized gene therapy based upon the information that we've received from the population analytics, and we can develop personalized medicine to truly address their own health plan, but we've gotten that insight through large data population analytics.
Thank you so much for the feedback on that question, Mandy. Now, any discussion of big data in healthcare seems to always include a piece that refers to what type of knowledge can be extracted from the data collected. It seems as if we have spent the last couple of years identifying and collecting data, but there have been issues turning that data into actual meaningful knowledge. And I wanted to ask you, Mandy, in your opinion, what have been the primary difficulties or roadblocks for healthcare providers to extract any meaningful
information? It's an excellent question, and I think that there are several concrete answers, right? The first and most obvious is money, because healthcare providers aren't always funded like insurance companies. Of course, there are some obvious exceptions to this, but it takes a significant investment in information technology in order to enable effective analytics. And unfortunately, smaller providers don't necessarily have access to that type of cash that's available for IT. They're trying to spend their money wisely on providing the best care that they can by effectively paying their care providers, not necessarily investing in the data capture mechanisms and the analytics and technologies that would support perhaps a more effective practice. There are obviously the Cleveland Clinics of the world, you know, and the Kaisers, but those, you know, the general practitioners and kind of smaller providers are not going to have the opportunity to participate individually in analytics of their own practice unless they become part of these larger IDNs, these larger integrated delivery networks of providers, so that they can leverage cost sharing for analytics platforms. Obviously, the paper process is still a significant barrier. Again, fully half of the information that comes out of a clinical encounter is either captured on paper or is transmitted via paper. So this is a significant roadblock to extracting meaning, and certainly timely meaning. Universal standards, you know, the universal standards and the lack of universal standards that's available for clinical data. These providers have everything, you know, HL7 is the clinical data capture standard, and HL7 doesn't exist in all providers. Some of them are still using proprietary formats to communicate intra-facility. So if you have a hospital and you transfer a patient from one bed to another, the standard is to use some form of HL7. However, there are some hospitals who are still using proprietary format for these types of transactions. And now those types of clinical transactions have become what part of the larger clinical data, big data set that the downstream insurance payers are looking for and the HIEs are looking for to begin looking at, you know, trend analysis for the testing. They want to look at the effective treatment protocols, eventually be able to look at outcomes. However, if you're not using a standard HL7 version, you know, HL7 transaction version, and if you're not using HL7 at all, that becomes very, very difficult. And finally, really, again, we've kind of hampered ourselves. There's this publish or perish academic mentality that is still pervasive throughout our providers. And there is an incentive to stay proprietary because of patent issues, because of treatment protocols that might result in dollars for that institution. There are competing interests at work, and unfortunately, unless and until the open data movement, and, you know, unless we can make it more financially valuable to become compliant and to achieve interoperability and to share data, it's going to be exceedingly difficult for us to truly derive the meaning from big data analytics in healthcare that is possible.
Thank you, Mandy. Let's talk for a moment about meaningful use enabling big data strategies in healthcare. For those of you unfamiliar with the term meaningful use, it refers to a qualification to receive federal funding for health information technology, specifically the use of electronic medical records. Mandy, can you talk to us a moment about how meaningful use enables big data techniques to be used in healthcare?
Absolutely. There are a couple components of meaningful use that are integral to effective big data analytics downstream. So one of them is the data capture. So the meaningful use guidelines require that specific clinical data elements be captured, and not just be captured, but be captured in a standard format. So I touched on the fact that the lack of universal standards has been a barrier to meaningful big data analytics in healthcare. The clinical data capture standards that are set for meaningful use are certainly a step in the right direction. For example, when you present at your doctor's office, you tell your doctor about your symptoms. Those symptoms are recorded as problems in the electronic medical records system at the provider's office. And all problems are now codified in a language called SNOMED. And so that means universally when you tell your doctor you have a persistent cough, that doctor will record persistent cough, which translates to a SNOMED code of XY. And that same SNOMED code of XY is universally applicable across the U.S. to all providers who are using a meaningful use certified EMR platform. So something that simple, if you amplify that across thousands of patients per year, it provides you with that semantic layer of interoperability. It's this first pass of that semantic layer of interoperability, making sure that the data elements all mean the same thing. So we're capturing the same type of data, and we are saying the same thing about each one of those data elements. From an interoperability standpoint, meaningful use also standardizes the transport mechanisms between EMRs. And so if my primary care physician is trying to share records with my OBGYN, there are standard document formats and standard transport protocols that are required for secure communications between these providers. So again, it's increasing that interoperability is definitely going to be effective in being able to amass a meaningful set of big data that could apply to population analytics, because now we have standards of interoperability for transfer as well as semantic layer interoperability at that clinical data attribute level. This is really going to enable patient engagement, because now patients are going to have the ability to get full medical records from each one of these providers that will be in the same format and have the same information, and it could be meaningful to that patient across the board. And that type of, that level of engagement, that level of empowerment and access to data is previously unheard of. So meaningful use is definitely taking steps in the right direction as far as enabling both the population analytics that are going to help us, you know, help us improve treatment protocols and ultimately help us improve population health, as well as, you know, improving the individual patient engagement and patient empowerment.
Thank you so much for the insight on the relationship between meaningful use and big data, Mandy. I want to turn our discussion for a moment to the concept of collaboration that big data has brought to the healthcare industry and how it has launched the idea of creating large data repositories, specifically an example of an initiative launched by two companies called MedRed and BT Health called Health Cloud. Mandy, what can you tell us about the Health Cloud project recently launched by MedRed and BT Health, and how has this manifested, and can we expect to see more of these aggregated healthcare big data platforms?
Absolutely. I'm very excited about the Health Cloud project, and I can't wait to see what information comes out of it. At first, I can't wait to see their utilization. It's a joint effort by the U.S. and the U.K. So BT is a U.K. company, and MedRed is a U.S.-based company. And it's an open data repository, and right now, the population in that data repository is about 50 million lives, so 50 million people. It's got about 5 years of data, and that data set includes clinical encounter data, pharmacy utilization data, and outcomes data. I'd like more information personally on what types of outcomes data they are incorporating, but I have not had an opportunity to go in and play with it yet. Eventually, the desire is to incorporate the CMS and FDA event reporting data sets so that we can actually look at clinical encounters and pharmacy data as it compares to FDA events, for example. So if there's a drug recall, if there's suddenly a drug allergen, so you might have an opportunity to predict where there may be the next FDA recall with that large a data set. It's truly an amazing opportunity, especially at some point in the future if they're able to layer in contextual data, like kind of geographical data, demographic data about all of those patients, even weather data. All of those factors potentially impact health in some way. So I'm excited, and I do believe that this type of initiative is going to continue to grow. We've already seen this. The CMS has already been releasing some of its data sets. You know, there are local, more localized open data initiatives. I do believe that we're going to see more and more of this as the public begins to demand it. And right now, I believe the implications for the Health Cloud project are going to be primarily focused on the pharmaceutical industry. It appears that that is the population who is actively and very aggressively going after locating, you know, analyzing that data set for research. But I believe as more and more people learn how to manage data of that size and as the tools improve, for big data analytics, and you don't need to know languages in order to begin playing with data sets of that size. And the tools for landing data sets and disparate data sets and being able to form data models without having to have really advanced knowledge of, you know, data modeling techniques and architecture. I think within the next 2 years, we're going to see a shift away from pharmaceutical and towards more consumer-focused groups who are getting their hands on that data and actually leveraging it for the purposes of truly clinical correlative disease analysis, for example.
Thank you so much for the insight on that, Mandy. You know, one of the interesting things about this collaboration between MedRed and BT Health is that MedRed is a United States-based company and BT Health is based in the UK, which got me thinking, can we expect to see more cross-collaboration between different countries moving forward when it comes to big data and healthcare?
I certainly hope so. I believe that other countries have actually been leveraging the power of big data on a much grander scale, much more effectively than the U.S. has, because the U.S. has been so focused on privacy and data silos. I believe that the U.S. lags behind, particularly Europe, in the utilization of large data sets for effective analysis. We have kind of hampered ourselves, I believe, by not having something as simple as, you know, a universal patient identifier, for example. It makes it very difficult for us to study our entire population as a whole, whereas other countries and the EU have solved this problem already and have been dealing with very, very large data sets and doing analysis of this type on very, very large data sets for years. So I am very excited, and I hope that there is a continued collaboration. There are clinical data standards that cross countries, LOINC, for example, HL7. These are cross, these are international standards that are applicable. So as we continue to develop improved capabilities and multi-language capabilities and natural language processing and multi-language capabilities, I believe that these collaborations are going to become very, very effective and provide us not just with local population health management, but we can begin to take data sets like this one, you know, from Health Cloud across the globe and look at, we can begin to look at the human population as a whole, and what a tremendous opportunity that would be.
Great insight. Thanks for the comments on that question, Mandy. Let's talk for a moment about the trend in healthcare to use data as a viable tool to help everyone as opposed to one person. With the shift in healthcare towards being a more efficient vehicle to manage the health of everyone as opposed to managing the care of just one individual, exactly how does big data fit into the vision of healthcare becoming more of a population versus individual management industry? And I do realize that you did touch earlier on population health and improvements in population health vis-a-vis big data, but I was wondering if you could expound on that a little bit more.
I think that there's both opportunity and risk in population management, right, population health management. Right now, given the focus on financial, effectively our healthcare providers, particularly those healthcare providers in accountable care organizations who are responsible for the cost of their membership as a whole rather than individual costs, we are setting up a scenario for those providers to act as insurance payers. So they're managing member risk very similarly to insurance companies, which is what you are able to do with large data sets. This is what your insurance company does. Your insurance company takes its 4 million members, and they have proprietary algorithms that they apply to those 4 million members to identify risk categories and assign risk categories to each one of those members based upon claims history, based upon now clinical data elements. So big data will enable that population cost management. It certainly can enable population health management as well. It can enable these discoveries, you know, clinical decision support across the population. It can enable the more rapid assessment of the effectiveness of clinical trials. And again, I hope that the definition of quality of care will shift and that population health management will shift away from a focus on cost and towards a focus on health and, you know, improved quality of life and improved patient outcome as a result of the analytics and being able to apply the learning from the analytics to patient treatment. There's also, though, from a population standpoint, we're beginning to see a growth in individual management as well. So PCMH, for example, the patient-centered medical home program, it requires timely and consistent care coordination for each patient. But the population analytics that are performed on PCMH are at the provider level. So you're analyzing the performance of the care coordination across the provider network that is central, you know, where the patient is center stage. So it's population management, but of the providers rather than the patient. I think that the opportunity certainly exists for us to leverage big data analytics for population health, both the population of the patients as well as the health and performance of the population of providers who are participating in their care.
Thank you, Mandy. I'd like to talk for a few minutes now about the concept of patient privacy as it relates to big data. It seems logical that when you discuss the implications that big data can have on a patient, the subject of privacy will frequently come up because the collection of data can expose intimate details about a patient's health history or condition and possibly expose them to privacy violations if the information is not protected. Patient privacy is a very delicate and sensitive topic, which goes without saying, for healthcare providers, and one that can have severe implications if unintentionally exposed or data is shared without a patient's implicit consent. So my question for you, Mandy, is in your view, what possible implications can big data have on patient privacy?
I honestly believe that big data, again, used kind of as a buzzword, is very frightening to some patient populations, particularly those who don't have the same level of kind of medical literacy or involvement in this open data movement as those of us kind of on the Twitter sphere and people like me, patients like me. And patients are very, very concerned that specific types of sensitive data are going to be shared amongst entities, right? For example, some patients don't want their mental health data going to their primary care provider. Or a lot of patients don't want their lab results data going to their insurance payer. So patients themselves are effectively limiting the efficacy of the data that can be available on their own individual medical record by instituting these opt-out mechanisms and by making sure that their data isn't shared. And it's, unfortunately, privacy is a double-edged sword. So while the opt-out mechanisms and the fines that are in place for breaches of information, and unfortunately there have been several recently, the fines that are in place are significant, and it is a huge deal for a provider to expose medical record information, and patients should be concerned about that. The size of the data set is pretty irrelevant. If your medical records are exposed, again, your information, your identity is exposed, there are significant implications on patient privacy, because the information that's available, if you have opted in and you have allowed your data to be shared with a health information exchange or between providers, then the data that can be exposed in a breach at one of those central organizations is much more, there's a much higher volume of data available about you than was available previously. However, from a personal standpoint, I would want to ensure that every single one of the providers who was participating in my care had access to my complete medical record and understood every aspect of me as a patient, because every single thing is relevant. And the contextual data about my life and about my medical history matters in my care. And so the analytics that could be performed against a quote-unquote big data set of just Mandy Bishop's data would show you correlations that don't exist for a larger population because they are specific and individual to me. So it's a double-edged sword. The HIEs and the ability to share electronically has created the opportunity for a larger breach of patient privacy. However, the sharing of all of those data elements is also contributing significantly to better care coordination, more improved and effective clinical decision support.
Thank you for that perspective, Mandy. You know, it's interesting that recently I interviewed Mac McMillan, who is chair of the HIMSS Privacy and Security Task Force, And one of the things that he pointed out about privacy is that it tends nowadays to be a very generational issue, meaning that older generations are a lot less likely to give up any type of personal information because they feel that it is a violation of their privacy, whereas younger generations are much more open and willing to providing personal information to social media sites, to any type of organization that asks for it. And I think what type of trade-off that you're seeing here is that if people expect population health management to improve, if they expect their own individual health to improve through population health management, there has to be a willingness to give up information, a willingness to provide personal information about their own healthcare to help advance population health. And I think that's a really important issue to bring up.
I totally agree. And I also, I mean, I liken it as far as from a big data standpoint. You know, the financial industry has been doing this for decades. And so there is big data available on our financial histories, right? I mean, this has been the case for as long as I've been alive. I know that I don't have the option to choose what financial data goes on my credit report. Wouldn't it be great if we could just selectively choose only to put positive information on our credit reports? But unfortunately, that's not the case, and we have all accepted this. As a society, we have accepted that our financial health is monitored by these three organizations who take regular checks across every single database that is available to them of our financial health. And so I'm not sure I understand completely the outrage at wanting to do the same for our physical health. From a personal standpoint, to me, I look at the financial industry and say, yes, you know what, the risk of a breach in the financial industry is just as significant as the risk of a breach in the health industry. And so it may be that there are people who find the health data itself to be much more sensitive or private, and I do understand that. Perhaps this is a generational issue, but I like my financial data as much as I like my health data, but I do believe that in order to have a complete picture of my health as a human being, you have to contribute every single bit of my records, and I want every single patient or every single provider who's contributing to my care to know everything there is to know about me so that they can make the most effective decision possible.
Great. Thanks for the feedback on that question, Mandy. Patient privacy is a really important issue. Let's turn our discussion to the protection of data and just how important it is for healthcare providers to not only develop a strategy to collect and analyze data, but incorporate security measures to protect that data. Mandy, can you tell us why is it more important than ever for healthcare organizations to adopt, modify, or enhance security protocols that cover how patient data is protected? And in your opinion, what are some security technologies that are the most effective to protect access to patient data in a healthcare facility?
Sure. Well, it used to be that patient data was only available in physical form, right, in paper charts at your doctor's office. So it was a relatively confined and very limited data set about your information, and it was very siloed. So your chart from your primary care physician would remain at your primary care physician. Your chart from a hospital encounter would be at the hospital unless requested by the primary care physician. So the data that was available on you was siloed and limited. Now, because of electronic medical records and because of health information exchanges and because of all of the meaningful use mandates and this increased interest in leveraging the power of big data to perform kind of population management, there's a significant amount more data that is available about you in electronic format, which is, of course, much easier to transport than big sheets of paper. So there were occasional breaches of privacy. There were occasional medical records theft. It did happen. It happened when there were paper charts, and it will continue to happen with paper charts. Unfortunately, now, with the conversion to electronic medical records, And again, with the amassing of these large data stores, the amount of data on an individual that is readily available for theft or misuse is much greater than it was in the days of paper charts. So I do think that it's critically important that a security protocol be in place first, just to validate the patient identity and ensure that the patient, that you are only releasing medical records to the patient or to the authorized representative of the patient, ensuring that the authorized representative is who they say they are, and validating. You need to have a very rigid and formal security protocol established and observed, right? It's not enough to just say that you have a protocol. You actually have to observe it each and every time that a patient enters your facility, each and every time that a new records request is generated, each and every time a patient accesses their portal. You know, now that we are releasing records to the patient, it's tantamount that we, again, validate the identity of that patient and ensure that when we are releasing records to the portal, we are releasing records to that patient and or the patient's authorized representatives only. So it's critically important because we do want to ensure that we maintain patient privacy, you know, to the degree that the patient wishes, right? So if the patient wishes to share their information across the board, if the patient wishes to share their medical records with their husband or spouse, that they can do so. But we have to ensure that it is, in fact, the patient making that decision. Recently, there was something last week, I visited an imaging center that used biometric palm scans to check me in. So I'm checking in, and they validated my information. And once all of my demographic information was validated, they took a palm scan. And that palm scan followed me throughout the facility through 4 floors and 8 tests and 6 providers. And all I had to do was hold my hand over a palm scanner, and they were able to validate my identity and hand me papers that had sensitive information on it that I could walk from floor to floor. And at the end of my visit, they gave me an encrypted thumb drive with my images and my records. And they did all of those things because my identity had been validated. They were able to store my palm scan along with my driver's license in their database. And so I was effectively, I was validated as a patient. And that rigid security protocol was followed at every step of the way.
That's very interesting, Mandy. Thanks for sharing that story. So what you're saying is that you're starting to see the increased use of biometrics for patient identification in several different capacities within a healthcare facility. Not only is it being used for the initial patient intake for an identification credential, but also along all the points or all the continuum of care, I should say, so that patient is properly identified before any procedures are administered. So that's definitely a change that we've seen over the past couple of years, and an expectation that biometrics for patient identification will increase.
Yes, I am. This was actually my first person experience with biometrics, and I was really impressed and excited. It certainly made my visit much easier.
Thank you so much for the feedback on that question, Mandy. Finally, I would be remiss if I didn't bring up the subject of the quality of big data and its potential impact on health information exchanges. With the growth of health information exchanges playing such a prominent role in the collection and distribution of massive amounts of data, and their reputation of being tainted with duplicate medical records and overlays from patient misidentification, Mandy, what technologies can healthcare providers use to ensure the integrity of their data? Keeping in mind that there have been a number of disruptive patient identification technologies that are proving to help accurately secure a patient's identity to help ensure quality data exchange. And we've already touched on one of these, and that is the use of biometrics for patient identification. So if you can also kind of comment a little bit about, in your opinion, can biometric identification of patients aid in addressing some of the challenges we just talked about?
I think that there's a lot of opportunity for biometrics to play a critical role in uniquely identifying a patient. I think that it's important, again, to touch on the standards and the fact that the universal standards have been a challenge in healthcare to date and continue to be a challenge. I think that biometrics would face that same challenge. It's an excellent technology. It is certainly the easiest way and most certain way to validate a patient's identity, and I think there's tremendous opportunity for it, but it would have to be judiciously applied and it would have to follow standards. So there would have to be standards adoption, and it would have to, there would also have to be alternative mechanisms in place for providers who could not afford to leverage biometric technology. But I certainly think that there's tremendous opportunity there.
Excellent feedback. Thank you so much, Mandy. I'd like to take a moment and thank Mandy for offering her insight on the topic of big data and healthcare. You can follow Mandy on Twitter under the username at MandyBPro, that's spelled MandiBPro. Thank you so much for your time today, Mandy.
Thanks, John. I really appreciate you having me on.
This concludes our podcast for today. We hope that you enjoyed the topic and our guest and encourage you to tune in to future podcasts where we interview industry professionals on topics that relate to the healthcare industry. For a full list of all of our podcasts, please visit our podcast page at www.m2sys.com/healthcare/healthcare-biometrics-podcasts. See you on our next podcast.
You're welcome, John.
Thanks
Thank you
for your time, Mandy.